I think property damage or property destruction is absolutely necessary, by which I don't consider that violent because it's not attacking life. But when you look at what has woken things up and what has forced attention to certain issues and certain outlooks, it wasn't more decades of standing around with signs or having polite marches or that stuff, which has done nothing whatsoever. And we'll see whether the new militancy is going to be effective.
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, it's time for the Weekly Freak Show. Headlines and highlights for the week ending Thursday, June 14th, 2001. My name's the V-Man, and I'll be your host for this half-hour look back at the news and features not heard in or glanced over by the corporate-controlled media. On this week's program, DJ Flux speaks with supporters of imprisoned AIM activist Leonard Peltier, as June is declared Peltier Awareness Month. And later, anarchist philosopher John Zerzan speaks to Freak Radio's John Malkin about his vision of a world free from technology. Plus, this week's Spotlight Sound, stand by for the Weekly Freak Show, coming up next. And now, headlines for the week ending Thursday, June 14th, 2001. Last week, Kern County Superior Court Judge Roger Randall halted construction of a $335 million prison project slated to be built on 640 acres of agricultural farmland in Delano, California. A lawsuit which was heard on April 6th was brought on by a coalition of environmental and prison activists who challenged the potential of the prison to have a huge impact on Delano's water and air quality, farmland, and schools. In the days before this ruling came down, backhoes and other equipment were moved onto the site. While no construction has taken place, the state of California wants to move forward with this plan for a lockup facility in Delano. According to Russ Heimrich, public affairs officer with the California Department of Corrections, the state intends to complete the necessary studies sometime this summer.
We are going to comply with the judge's ruling to prepare a further cumulative impacts analysis, and we expect to complete that analysis by mid-July. That was what the judge ruled. He wanted additional information for the environmental impact report, and so that's what we intend to give him. We still plan to build this institution in Delano, and we're confident that the further analysis of the additional information that we supply will comply with CEQA and the court order.
With its 5,000 prisoners and nearly 2,000 guards, critics say the new prison would negatively affect the population of 39,000 people already living in Delano. Michelle Foy is with California Prison Focus. She is hopeful this ruling will further stall the project in order to organize resistance amongst residents of Delano.
They will have to redo the environmental impact statement on the prison and open up the process, sort of have a whole public comment period and go through the process that is required with construction projects, you know, at this level. So that would push it back considerably, and that's what we're looking for.
On Friday, June 8th, tens of thousands of workers and students in major cities throughout Colombia organized massive protests against structural adjustment programs imposed by the International Monetary Fund as a war in their country escalates and a fragile peace process is stalled. Teachers, state workers, and students organized marches this week against a budget measure that would reduce the level of government spending in rural areas where there is very little organized government and most of the violence in the country occurs. The protests have been largely peaceful, but some demonstrators were injured when riot police cleared a blocked highway in the northeastern city of Bucaramanga. During one protest in Medellin, the country's second largest city, students marched through the streets carrying a large banner that read, "Yankees, get out of Colombia and the rest of the world." About 300,000 teachers and 125,000 public health workers have been on strike or participating in work slowdowns since last month to protest the measure being enacted as part of a structural adjustment program agreed to in return for IMF loans. Students have now joined the workers in their struggle. On the morning of Friday, June 8th, all charges were dismissed against the last of four San Francisco Food Not Bombs volunteers who were arrested May 7th on charges of violating a court order prohibiting the distribution of food without a permit. Since 1988, there have been over 1,000 arrests of Food Not Bombs volunteers for sharing free food as part of their campaign to bring attention to issues of homelessness and poverty in San Francisco. Convicted last Wednesday of arson, criminal mischief, and possession of a destructive device, Jeffrey Lurz, also known as Free, was sentenced to more than 22 years in prison on June 11th for a fire last year at the Romania Truck Center in Eugene, Oregon. No one was injured in the blaze, which destroyed three sport utility vehicles and caused an estimated $400,000 in damage. Free was also convicted of several charges in an attempted arson at the Tyree Oil Company last May. Craig Marshall, also known as Critter, another activist implicated in the fires, accepted a plea bargain in November and is serving a 5.5-year prison sentence. The Romania truck lot was torched again this past March, causing $1 million in damage, and at least 30 sport utility vehicles were destroyed. No suspects have been named in that arson, which occurred just days before Free went on trial. Activists with Santa Cruz Earth First began occupying a piece of Redwood Empire property 3 miles north of Boulder Creek on Sunday, June 10th, after other methods failed to stop a timber harvest plan recently approved by the California Department of Forestry.
CDF's ruling is generally a rubber stamp on what the timber industry wants, and that's been the case for Redwood Empire for at least 5 or 6 years, but really intensely since 98 in Gamecock Canyon, and last year in Ramsey Gulch, and this year in Boulder Creek.
Blackbird, who has been active in the Ramsey Gulch tree sit near Corralitos, California, thinks this logging is unnecessary.
It includes a road to be built alongside redwoods that are 1,500 to 2,000 years old right over their root systems. It includes cutting a few old-growth Douglas firs and redwoods that aren't listed or discussed in the plan because of the prominence of the six that aren't being cut, and that's kind of gotten Roger Birch and Redwood Empire off the hook.
In the early hours of Wednesday, June 13th, Sparrow, one of the tree sitters, was injured when she lost her footing and fell 30 feet from a redwood tree, hitting her head on a stump. She was taken by helicopter to San Jose Medical Center, where she was listed in critical condition. Blackbird said the climbers were not taking unnecessary risks. Two Santa Cruz residents, who stayed with Sparrow until medical crews arrived, were arrested on suspicion of trespassing.
One of them waited with her for help, and the other went to get help and help lead the rescue team to Sparrow, where she fell. For taking that role and helping save Sparrow's life, they each spent a few hours in jail and cited and released for trespassing, and they'll be getting their day in court sometime in early July.
At least two other protesters remained in the trees after deputies and emergency personnel left the scene. Santa Cruz Earth First members say they will continue their protest until this timber harvest plan is stopped. On Wednesday, June 13th, the U.S. government withdrew a court order directing the Seattle Independent Media Center to turn over computer server logs to the FBI. The news came as attorneys for the group were preparing to file a legal brief challenging the order. IMC counsel Nancy Chang of the Center for Constitutional Rights stated, "Although the court order has been withdrawn, the IMC's concerns over the government's ability to use internet technology for surveillance of political activists continue to linger." The order was issued at the height of protest activities against the Summit of the Americas in Quebec City, Canada, on April 21st. FBI and Secret Service agents claimed at the time that they needed the server logs to assist in an investigation related to sensitive documents which had been stolen from the Canadian police and posted to the IMC website by an anonymous journalist. With the court order withdrawn, the Independent Media Center is denied the immediate opportunity to have the courts rule on several serious constitutional rights concerns, and at this time remains undecided about further legal action. And finally, U.S. President George W. Bush has been receiving a warm welcome on his first official visit to Europe this week. Thousands protested in Spain on Tuesday, June 12th, when Bush first landed. Then on Wednesday, 24 Greenpeace activists chained themselves together to block an exit at the airfield where Bush arrived in Brussels for a NATO summit. The activists were highlighting their position on such issues as Bush's stance on the Kyoto Accord, the National Missile Defense Shield, and the death penalty. "It's a symbolic action, showing he's not welcome," said Dan Hinsgall, a spokesperson for the demonstrators. In Norway on Wednesday, 10 Greenpeace activists ended an 8-hour occupation of a U.S.-bound oil tanker rather than face police action. On Thursday, June 14th, thousands of anti-globalization and environmental activists converged on Gothenburg, Sweden, as Bush joined 15 European Union leaders for a summit expected to focus on the widening gap between Washington and its European allies. About 1,500 police have been deployed to protect Bush and EU leaders meeting in the western port. Metal barricades and concrete blocks surround key venues, and some central parts of the city are closed to the public. With police helicopters hovering overhead, thousands of demonstrators are being corralled into tightly controlled areas and patrolled with police dogs. Some of the demonstrators oppose U.S. policies, while others want to protest against the EU, which they dismiss as undemocratic. And those were headlines for the week ending Thursday, June 14, 2001. The month of June is a significant one in the history of the Lakota people. It was on June 25, 1876, that the Lakota people defeated General Custer at the Battle of Little Bighorn. Almost a century later, on June 26, 1975, a tragic shootout occurred on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, which left two FBI agents and one AIM member dead. 2 years later, despite a lack of credible witnesses and no ballistics evidence linking him to the crime, Leonard Peltier was convicted in the agents' deaths. On June 1, 1977, he was sentenced to two consecutive life terms and has been behind bars for over 24 years. The Leonard Peltier Defense Committee has declared June to be Peltier Awareness Month. Over the Memorial Day weekend, Freak Radio's DJ Flux attended the Red Road Powwow in Gilroy, California, and spoke with a few of Peltier's supporters about the case.
This is DJ Flux with Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm here at the Red Road Powwow. I'm talking to, what's your name?
On.
On. I'm talking to On and...
Glinda.
Glinda, and we're here. You have a Free Leonard Peltier booth up. How long have you been involved with this movement?
I've been involved with this about 3 months. The Leonard Peltier Support Group is an offshoot of the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee, and we're working on bringing out the truth and working, getting petitions, getting the public aware of who Leonard Peltier is and what his plight is, that he needs to get justice for this, at least a new trial. The FBI are holding 6,000 pages of documents, and they haven't released them yet, and we're really working on that, petitioning our congressmen and our senators, so they will put pressure on the FBI to release these and possibly get Peltier a new trial.
How long has he been incarcerated?
He's been incarcerated for 26 years for the apparent killing of two FBI agents on Pine Ridge at the Jumping Bull site. They did not unequivocally find the evidence, but he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But the truth needs to come out now, and we need the FBI to cooperate and give forth that information.
Great. It seems that Leonard Peltier is really the center of a lot of activism with the Native Americans in this country. And has he really been the center of the AIM movement, sort of the way Mumia has been for other prison activists?
To a degree, because when it all started back in the 70s, yeah, he was involved in that, along with Russell Means and all the others that were involved in it. So I think the American government, they kind of want to see that squashed. They don't want any more upsurging or uprising, you know. And all they were doing was just trying to maintain the traditional belief of Native Americans and to have the government recognize that the reservations are really poor. Pine Ridge Reservation is the poorest one of the poorest reservations in the United States, and the living conditions are horrible there, you know. And they were just trying to maintain their identity, you know, and things got out of hand. The people don't seem to realize that although two FBI agents did die and it was a really horrible thing, many Native Americans died in that era as well that haven't been publicized. There's a long list of people that died in that siege of terror, as they call it, you know. And it all has to do with the BIA and all that was involved, you know, not looking in the best interests of the people. And whether I truly believe that Leonard Peltier is not responsible for these killings, you know, and just to bring justice and truth out is the main thing, you know. Yeah, bring truth, bring light to the truth. With reference to the documents that were kept from the Timothy McVeigh trial that almost granted him a new trial and some other people, you know, this sheds light that the FBI, they're keeping us from information, you know, and the Freedom of Information Act should have sanctioned these documents, but it hasn't, you know. Yeah. So they have a lot more power than they really need to have.
Yeah, the American government is definitely being selective in what they want to let out and where they want to go with it. And especially Bill Clinton had the opportunity to pardon Leonard Peltier, given all the evidence that was present, but he chose not to. And he chose to free people like Michael Milken, I believe, who was involved in the savings and loan scandal and basically was a criminal straight out. But people like Leonard Peltier did not have any chance, really.
Well, he was promised. As a matter of fact, it was really close, and apparently from one day to the next, it changed. And what the FBI did is they sent a petition through, and they all signed it, you know, and they put a lot of pressure on Clinton not to do it.
Really? Right. I did not know about that.
Yeah, they rallied against that. Yeah, they rallied that day, you know.
So there was a lobby. But who was behind the lobby that wanted to not have Leonard Peltier freed?
The FBI.
The FBI, yeah. Wow. Well, great. Thank you very much. This has been On.
Yeah.
This is DJ Flux with Free Radio Santa Cruz at the Red Road Powwow.
Hey. In the shadowed night, sometimes in the shadowed night, I become spirit. The walls, the bars, the gratings dissolve into light, and I unloosen my soul and fly through the inner darkness of my being. I become transparent, a bright shadow, a bird of dreams, singing from the tree of life.
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, you're listening to the Weekly Freak Show on the web at www.perumpradio.com. Please stay tuned for contact information at the end of this half-hour broadcast. That was this week's spotlight sound, Sundancer, from Shaman 2, available online from the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee at www.freepeltier.org. John Zerzan is known in Eugene for his anarchist writings, which have been compared to the infamous Unabomber Manifesto. The author of numerous essays criticizing consumerism and high technology as a contemporary form of slavery, Zerzan has described the Unabomber as being on the same track as himself, philosophically. Where they differ is on the issue of means, violent means in particular. Freak Radio's John Malkin recently spoke with author John Zerzan. They discuss property destruction as a tactic, what effect technology has had on society, and how anarchists can reconnect with nature.
I wonder what you think the role is of violence in anarchism, if it plays a role at all.
Well, that's a tough one. That's just one of so many questions that are pretty challenging. I think speaking specifically or tactically, I think property damage or property destruction is absolutely necessary, by which I don't consider that violent because it's not attacking life. But when you look at what has woken things up and what has forced attention to certain issues and certain outlooks, it wasn't more decades of standing around with signs or having polite marches or that stuff, which has done nothing whatsoever. And we'll see whether the new militancy is going to be effective. We don't know yet. But, you know, Seattle wouldn't have had any meaning, and yet the word Seattle to activists means one thing, and that was a year and a half ago, anti-WTO stuff, of course. And people were inspired all over the world, even though a lot of pacifists and liberals immediately started wailing and deriding it or decrying it, condemning it. Oh, you ruined everything. Well, that's not only false, but I think what we're seeing is less of that kind of thinking I think in Quebec City there was, as I understand it, much less attack on people who were very militant in the streets up there. And I think the simple reason is we know what direction everything is going, and it's going there really fast. The end of the biosphere is coming into view, plus every kind of pathology on the social level and even the personal level. So, you know, it's not, there's less tolerance for the old gestures that, if we just behave well and do what the cops say and we're more moral than they are or something like that. Well, sadly enough, that ain't going to get it done.
Hmm. Some people have even said that the whole anti-corporate message made its way into the mainstream media because the violence drew the attention of the media. Do you think that's true?
Oh, yeah, I think it's true, but I'll tell you, I'm not so concerned with the anti-corporate message, as a matter of fact, than I am with a much deeper critique of... I mean, when you think about it, anti-corporate stuff, like the end corporate dominance, for example, you know, they want to put some curbs on corporations, but when you think of it, they're not even talking about abolishing corporations, much less abolishing capital, much less even thinking about what is the nature of technology. What is the logic and the meaning and the fruits of civilization itself? That's what I'm interested in. I'm not on the terrain of tilting around with propaganda about corporations. That's extremely superficial in my view. It has to be a much deeper vision and outlook and analysis in my view.
And you have written a lot about technology, and I wonder if you could tell me what your current thoughts are about technology and where it's come from and how it has either served or not served humans.
I think the basic thing to me is that technology has always been the embeddedness or the incarnation of society. To say that it's neutral, for instance, is really false. It's really missing the whole point. It has always expressed the values of the social life that it finds itself a part of. And I think now it's becoming even more clear. It's starting to dawn on people that you can't use technology for good ends if it is inherently expressing certain values. For example, distancing over closeness, or efficiency over playfulness, or another one would be a fractionated individual, a specialized, narrowed self versus a fuller self, a less divided self, that relates to division of labor most fundamentally. So I think the people are still fed this idea that, well, it just depends on which Marx, you know, ended up falling for. It just depends on which class controls the technology. Well, I don't think that that's it at all. I think it's just it inheres in the technology. The level of division of labor you're at determines an awful lot. I'm not throwing out the realities of class or the reality of what the relationship called capital does to people in the world at all, but this is even more of a grounding for alienation, it seems to me.
Hmm. Do you think that there's some possibility of some balanced point where technology could be used in this manner of actually providing more leisure time and not constraining people?
Well, the system has always said that that's what's going to happen, but it has never happened. It's kind of funny, you know, people were working more and more, and it's not accidental. I mean, there's a lot one could say about that. I remember my friends in Detroit, Fifth Estate, that periodical, which is still going on. Back in the 70s, there was a piece that argued there's no such thing as a labor-saving technology, because when you think about all of the labor that's congealed in any part of technology, this was the argument, and I haven't seen it refuted, there's no saving. You may push it off onto somebody else, and which is what usually happens. I mean, you know, we go into a store, we find a nice, clean, gleaming, whatever it is, a computer or anything else, but we don't naturally or very automatically think, what goes into this thing, which is so nice? And you can plug it in, and you can, you know, all the drudgery, all the toxicity, the assault on nature. It doesn't take too much to deconstruct that.
Mm.
So the leisure for some is not only paid for by the continuing degradation of many, but it seems like it's always been that way. I mean, it's always been kind of a con job, it seems to me.
Mm.
In other words, what do we want to preserve? And what is the cost of preserving it? That's the real question. You know, like whether it's a telephone system or anything else, they need to start thinking about the different parts of it.
People who grow up with these things, in a way, think they've always existed and are helpful.
Exactly.
Inherently so, and perhaps they're not. The computer and the internet, I mean, here's an example of a technology that leftists and revolutionaries even say is a revolutionary tool, or is a tool that can be used in a revolutionary way. And it's even been described to me by some people as being anarchist in that it's decentralized, apparently. Do you think this is a tool that can be used for reform or revolution?
Well, I think fundamentally the only thing that qualifies as a tool ultimately to me is something that doesn't involve division of labor. Because after that, it's a system, not a tool. It's part of a global system that's becoming more of a closed system, which is bringing the end of the natural world and, you know, even the end of the biosphere. So it's really silly and irresponsible to just say it's a tool. And yet at the same time, of course, there are, you know, AINFOS or all kinds of anarchist websites, for example. There's coordination or at least communication instantly around the globe. I mean, no one's denying that. I mean, that's true, but same with the telephone or whatever, but it doesn't mean that this is somehow transcends the whole social order or the way it works and what its priorities are and its dynamics. I mean, it's not separable is my point. I mean, we're always being held hostage to it, though, in so many different ways. I mean, there's a million ways that, well, you couldn't do without this or that, or, and we do get used to all kinds of stuff. I certainly am. I mean, I'm glad I have a comfortable little house. I mean, you know, I don't live in a cave. But when you start thinking about the real nature of this, then you begin to look beneath the surface, even though some people are not very willing to do that. The left apparently is never going to do that. I'm just amazed that, you know, even the straight press is better at reporting what's up in terms of the anarchy movement, in which this, and now we call it primitivism, I guess, among other things, Luddite or anti-civilization or green anarchy. There's a lot of different words, but that's the kind of syndrome or outlook that is taking off. It isn't the old leftist stuff, I don't think.
The commonality between these terms, green anarchy and Luddite and so on, it seems to be at least one of the commonalities is a reunification with nature, something that this sort of artificial separation that happened at some point between human beings and nature, seems to me.
Well put. That's very cogently put. I think that's precisely it. That's what a lot of young people are fighting for. It's not so that they can buy an SUV or something. I mean, you know, it really is about that. That's the vital thread that has to be preserved and reestablished. You know, it's more and more obvious what we're losing. And we see the indigenous cultures being just stamped out all over the world by the industrial system, by the technological imperative, you know, which is why I think the anarchy movement is going to be making more connections and more common cause with indigenous people, frankly. But I think you're right, that's a real touchstone. It's been just profoundly inspiring to me. Again, the picture of nature or humans vis-a-vis nature, which for a couple of million years lived in balance, you know, lived with an adaptation to the rest of the world rather than now we're just quickly destroying it. This crisis that we have now, I think of it as 10,000 years old because it started with civilization. You know, it quickly denuded the Middle East and North Africa and Greece. You know, that was wiped out just like now we think of clear cutting and all, but it's nothing new. Civilization or agriculture commenced that right from the get.
And that's all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening. The Weekly Freak Show is produced in the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, and can also be heard on more than 18 non-commercial, micro-powered, community, and web-based radio stations, including Variety Radio 98.1 FM in Warrenton, Virginia. The interviews featured in this program are only a sample of the fine shows each week on Freak Radio. To hear it all, 24 hours a day, listen online at www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. For questions and comments, send email to FRSC@microradio.net. That's FRSC info@microradio.net or snail mail to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California 95061. That's P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California 95061, or call us at area code 831-427-4523. That's 831-427-4523. Thanks to the A-Infos Radio Project and Independent Media Center for distribution. Our theme music was arranged and performed by Neil Norman and his Cosmic Orchestra. For John Malkin, DJ Flux, and everyone here at Freak Radio, my name's the V-Man, and that's a wrap.